Welcome to The Common Share, a podcast about cooperative businesses. I'm Asa Marshall with Cooperatives First, an organization that promotes co-op business development in rural and Indigenous communities across Western Canada. We're recording in Saskatoon on Treaty 6 territory and the traditional homeland of the Métis. James Grieve is a certified management consultant who has worked with many of our clients to help them plan their co-op businesses and set them up for success. James is passionate about business strategy, and his experience and expertise in working with large and small organizations in a variety of industries has developed his keen understanding of how to analyze organizations, diagnose challenges, and uncover the blind spots in all aspects of business that might hinder performance. In this episode, Kyle spoke to James about his approach to creating a business plan, including how to know when you need one, understanding the why of your business, and recognizing the value of experts and resources in this process.
Welcome, James. I'm super excited to have James Grieve, the Senior Business Advisor for Catalyst Strategies, join us this morning. James has worked with Cooperatives First and our clients for 6.5, 7 years, I think. Can you tell us a bit about yourself, James, and the work that you do with startups?
Well, thank you for having me, Kyle. This is really a pleasure to be on this with you and to have a great conversation with you and our audience here with Cooperatives First. So, as you mentioned, Catalyst Strategies is my consulting firm based in Kelowna, British Columbia. And the areas in my practice that I focus on are strategy, business transformation, and customer experience. And I love working with startups. I have a real passion for businesses that are starting up, growing, and then into succession as well. But particularly at that startup phase, because you know there's just so many great entrepreneurs out there, and the entrepreneurial spirit is stronger than ever. And the business models in order to do that are evolving as well. So I've worked with a lot of different entrepreneurs and businesses in a variety of industries. And one thing rings true with them is the ones that are really determined and have a willingness to learn and grow in their businesses, the ones that flourish. And it takes all of us to provide the high tide that lifts those boats. So really excited about this conversation today.
Fabulous. So you mentioned you work with groups at all different stages of a business's life cycle. I'm hoping folks can listen to this podcast and understand what are some things that co-ops board can maybe do themselves during the startup phase? Or what are some things you think they should get help from a coach with?
That's a really great question. And I think, you know, if you boil it down in the simplest terms of, you know, we're all familiar with who, what, when, where, why, and how. And I think the first, you know, when we start with businesses that have an idea, or perhaps it's vetted more than an idea. But the key thing is just understanding why you want to do this. So what is it that's actually bringing people together, and what need are they solving for themselves, for the community, for one another, and for a member, for their members in the case of a co-op? So I think the number one thing that a board can do is just really pause and say, why do we want to do this? Rather than rush into, oh, does it make sense financially, and who are we going to have on the team, and all those type of things? Those are great. Those will evolve. But I think the number one thing is understanding why. Okay. And that's the number one thing. Next thing is who's going to be involved, and who's going to be involved now, and who's going to be involved as this grows and scales. So at the startup, you really want to make sure that you're, once you've nailed down your why, so what problem you're solving and what opportunities there is, who's going to be involved and within your steering committee, if you will, and on your board. And do we all get along, and do we agree on what we're doing moving forward? That's the next step. And it's a stepped process without sounding like it's too robotic here, Kyle. It's just it's a step process. Why are we doing this? You know, who's going to be involved? The next thing says, okay, so what is it we're going to do? So we have the why, the who, then what do we do? And what is it we're going to do? And make sure that it's right-sized for this, and make sure that the governance is in play in order to make that happen. That's where your great work comes in. You're the expert in this, and I say that honestly, and I want people to know that if they want a single source of truth for the co-op expertise on the governance side of it, please contact Kyle. And I would say this if you weren't on the podcast here, Kyle. So I think that's understanding who's there, and then what are you doing, and then how, you know, how's that going to come together as far as that group? So that it just isn't a dream for one person or a group of people, that actually is going to come to fruition. So just to recap there, we have the why, the who, the what, and then what's really important is the how. How are you going to do this? And how is this going to come together? We call that in business speak here, and I don't want to get too much into jargon, but it's your operating model. So you have your business, how it's architected, but how is it going to operate? And how is it going to operate in such a way that it's efficient, so that it's consistent as well? So that actually it's not just one person's, it can't just rely on one person or one group of people, because a co-op is owned by its members. So you got to make sure that everybody is buying into that. And when that board rolls off, that the next group that comes in picks up and seamlessly makes it as good as it was or better going forward. So kind of a long-winded response. I'll stop there in case you wanted to add anything or to ask any questions on that.
No, I think that's really great. And I think I'd like to echo too the steps to a startup. Although they are a bit different for every group, it is, I think, important to have those check-in points maybe, where you do tick those boxes and say, okay, what's our what? What's our why? Who is involved? We definitely take that step approach when we build our courses and workbook and materials like that. Excellent. Would you say in your work with startups, is there a particular point where groups do reach out to coaches? Is there a kind of point where you find more groups will come to you when they need assistance?
Again, really good question. I think that they do if it now more and more and more than ever, people are more aware. And I think they have this sense that they can't do it themselves, this heroic nature of, oh, we're just going to build the business and we don't need anybody else. Thankfully, that's fading away. And I don't say this because I'm a consultant and provide coaching services for people. And quite often I may say to people, hey, I'm not the right person for this, but let me refer you to someone else who can help you. But I think that willingness to ask for help is there, and they do ask for it. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's resources online that they could see and they say, okay, maybe this is something worth pursuing. So in answer to your question, yes, they do reach out. And I think it's really important to engage someone with a different perspective who has a different lens on that business, or maybe not involved in that particular industry at all, that can just ask the type of questions that maybe uncover some spots that you never thought of before. So, you know, it's a learning curve for the coach or the consultant, but a good coach and consultant will have a methodology that's agnostic of the industry that not only is helpful in the moment, but I think it's really important that provides a competency framework going forward. I often joke and I say that I feel like the best day for a consultant and a coach is the day that you no longer are needed. And you're like Charlotte and Charlotte's Web. You come in, you make a difference in the farm, you leave a legacy, and then you leave, because everybody has, it's a better place to be thereafter. But if you leave people with the tools to feel they can do it themselves, it's fantastic. And one of the greatest feelings of gratitude I have is when people contact me later and they're speaking or they're using the frameworks that I've, you know, shared with them or co-created with them as we're there and I'm no longer needed, but it continues on afterward. So
in our experience, one of those, I think, key touch points for groups that when they really feel they need help is around business planning. Mm-hmm. And I feel as though business plans are kind of viewed as like almost a holy grail in the startup right. space. Everyone thinks they need one. Could you give your thoughts on that? Maybe when do you think a co-op would need a business plan?
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for asking that. I think that they'll need a plan when they've come together to understand those elements we talked about earlier. Why are we doing this? Who's doing it? When they've answered all the who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much, or at least have a framework that they can get there, that's when a plan is needed, because a plan is an output. The planning is the outcome of this, right? So, you know, again, I don't want to get cute with words here, but the thing is that the plan is a document, and unto itself, it's not going to do much. And it doesn't mean anything if the consultant goes away into a dark room and takes all the information if the people who are going to actually be doing the work afterward aren't involved in the process. So I think a business plan is a process of planning with an output that is involving everybody. So when people are prepared, who've started a co-op or on a steering committee or a board, when they're prepared to say, can you provide us with some structure on how the planning process works? That's when people are ready for a business plan. To have it dropped on their desk so they can get financing from the bank isn't the answer. I don't believe, because you've got to be able to live that plan and go from there. And quite honestly, in a lot of cases, the most cases, the best plans are ones in which the consultant just held the pen and everybody else just essentially informed what to write. Of course, there's a lot of research that goes into it and shaping things a little bit, but the best ones that are is the day when the co-op's board team steering committee feels like they wrote it themselves.
Interesting. I completely agree as well. I definitely agree that the planning is a much more meaningful, important outcome of a business plan engagement. So we've mentioned some of the boxes maybe that groups should check before engaging in business planning. I think some of those things really get summarized in a business model canvas. Is that a tool you've used with clients, or is that something you think folks should pay some attention to before maybe in hiring a consultant to work on a business plan?
100%. I'm a big, strong proponent of strategizer methodology, which is the business plan, business model canvas. And I'm a coach in that area. But I'm not saying that just because of that. I was even before, you know, getting the passion for it and coaching it. But what it is, it's a really nice, tidy 9-section document for anybody who's listening who's not familiar with this, but it's a document that really makes you think about with guided questions on what unique value you're bringing, who your customers are, what relationships you have with them, what type of channels you're going to have to reach your customers, who your suppliers are, what type of relationships you have with them, who are the other people that you need, not just suppliers of raw goods, but other key people that you might want to engage with. And then how are you going to make money? How are you going to keep money? And how are you going to invest money? So that viability piece on the other side. So absolutely, Kyle, 100%. That tool is really key. And as a consultant and coach coming into these situations, if people have that information, it really greases the wheels and keeps the engine going for an effective business planning exercise. So that would be an important first step. And then really understanding within that model, there's, you know, other, you know, options with strategizer and value proposition design, and there's operating model canvas, all these things that are there. And this isn't, again, baffling people with terms and consulting speak. But if you have a handle on the business model canvas, it's a great foundation to use the other things where you can really develop a plan. And essentially, back to the previous question on business planning, it de-risks your business going forward. And one of the options coming out of the plan is we don't do it. And that's not a bad option, rather than do it without a plan and then it's doomed for failure, essentially. So,
very interesting. And if folks do want more information on building a business model canvas, check out our Intro to Co-ops course, Starting a Co-op Part 3, walks you through all the steps of building a business model canvas.
So cool.
Yeah. A lot of groups, I think, try to tackle writing a business plan themselves. And there's lots of resources out there. We've got a brand new resource called the Biz Plan Generator, aimed at helping groups write their own business plans. What would you say are some of the pros and cons of working on a business plan yourself with just, say, your board? And when maybe should co-ops seek out professional help?
Hey, great question. So I think there are some pros on that for sure of doing it themselves, because if you do it yourself, you've at least had a chance to try it. And then you understand the language around it and what is involved. Because if you just leave it to someone else to write the plan, like we talked about earlier, there's no competency framework going forward. So at least you come prepared to the point if and when and as you may need some other help. So all that is great. I think what's important to where you may want to involve a professional on that is just for context and for a set of outside eyes. So we think we all have a tendency, myself included, is that when we're so invested in something, we want something to happen. We may not take into account the risks of it not happening. And there's an entire, you know, understanding of a risk registry, you know, of like understanding human resources risks and financial risks and operating risks and all these other things that are integral to a business. So yes, absolutely. There's pros for people to try their own business planning. Once they feel comfortable with that and are motivated to move forward, it's almost having a check-in on it to say, okay, does this make sense? And what am I missing? Or what are we missing on this? And then you have an expert. I think not a good strategy to just hire someone and say, we need a business plan for this because we want to get to this point. Because it's the value, as you mentioned, Kyle, is in the planning, not the plan. So more value as a pro for people to try to do it, get at least get started on their own so they at least know what they don't know. When you think of known unknowns and unknown unknowns, at least if you've tried something, you have a known unknown, right? You know what you don't know. You're always better in a situation when you know what you don't know. When you enter a situation and you don't know what you don't know, it's just trickier. And then at the end of the day, that consultant or that coach is going to have to go away. You know, when it's called consulting, not codependency for a reason. So, you know, we can't be there forever. So it's better when people are, have this understanding, they just get tweaked a little bit, maybe some guidance, and then they're off on their own. They're take the training wheels off and look out, their business can thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there maybe any tips or resources you're aware of that you point people towards to help with getting that ball rolling themselves? I think a lot of folks, even if they use a tool like our BizMind generator, you know, there's terminology, lots of things that they're not going to be familiar with. And certainly when it comes to putting together a financial plan, I think that's really intimidating for aspiring entrepreneurs. Are there any tips or resources maybe you'd share with folks?
Absolutely. That's a great question. So I'll start with a resource as far as like a book or repository. There's a great book and there's a website on it called Build a Better Business. And what I like about that is that it's written in such a way that it focuses on your pain point. And people who understand strategizer methodology and value proposition have gone through the business model canvas, understand pains and gains, right? So if you have a pain point, in the case would be, I'm looking to expand a market, then it streamlines the methods that you would use to do that. So you don't have to read the whole book. It just says, use these three things. So that's one resource I think is really important. But books alone don't do it. And self-directed, not everybody learns the same way. So I think that your platform you've developed, Kyle, and your expertise, you've developed a really nice set of tools there with Cooperatives First that people can look at beyond. So try to, there's some resources in print, there's the online resources. And then if someone has a really particular question that they want to make sure they get it right, like if there's legal advice, professional advice from a consultant, professional advice from coach or financial expert, I would reach out to a proven and vetted group of people who understand that and make sure that you are very certain that the people you're asking for advice from or have the qualifications to do so. So that's not necessarily where you would start. Maybe you'd start for those people to say, hey, can you help me out along the path? Just like the question you asked, but you don't need that person from start to finish. You might just need them at the end. So that would be my advice. Just have those people around. It takes all of us. And it's like an Avengers model. It takes, sometimes you need Wonder Woman. Sometimes you need the Hulk. You know what I mean? And you pull in these different people as you need them in your business. And I think at the root of it, if anybody's really involved in entrepreneurship and co-ops particularly, we all want people to succeed because it makes our society and our community a better place. So,
yeah, very cool. Very cool. I think Wonder Woman's actually DC, but I'll let that
slide. Oh, I'm sorry, baby. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, very cool. Maybe on the flip side from some tips, what are some of the common challenges that you've seen startups walk into or find themselves in?
Well, I've seen several. I think one of them is, let's start what I think is a positive. They underestimate themselves. Right. And it sounds like a negative, but it's actually a positive. There's a lot of bright people out there that just think I can't do this. And that's a challenge. So that's a roadblock, is that mindset. If you have a mindset of we could do this, that's a really good start. Also an abundance mindset in thinking that, okay, I can ask people, for help. So that's one of the roadblocks, is just not knowing that there's help available, that, search, the help that's available, both, as I mentioned, in print or the great platform you've developed at Cooperatives First, or people who are, able and willing and have a passion for helping. So that's one of the roadblocks, is just not knowing where to go for help or not feeling that you can ask for help. The other side of that, which I think is a negative, is people thinking they can do it themselves and they don't need anybody's help. That's a bigger problem, right? I think that awareness and that business emotional intelligence that is really smart to say, I need some help versus, oh, we've got this. And then you go too far down the road without taking into account some element of what may be a risk or an opportunity in the business, and it's missed and it's too far down the line. Another thing too, I think, is it's important for people not to get too fascinated with their idea until it's vetted. Because I think if you become so fascinated with it and just convince yourself it's going to be wonderful. Everybody wants everything to work. Don't get me wrong. A goal of a consultant or a coach isn't to poke holes in what you're doing and be a wet blanket. But if you get too invested and too excited about something, and then without seeing that there could be a potential where A, it won't work at all. B, is it just needs a little tweaking, or C, maybe we need a couple more people or a couple different type of equipment or whatever the case may be to make it happen. I think that's a risk as well. That's a con. So just having an open mind, an abundance mindset, and an understanding that it is going to take work and things don't happen overnight.
Yeah, agreed. And I think, I mean, a lot of groups that I've worked with, I mean, obviously starting a business is a scary process. You're investing time and energy and money, and nobody wants to see their business fail. One of the things we often recommend to mitigate some of those things, getting fascinated with your idea and recognizing maybe when you need help, is try and start doing the work of the co-op as soon as possible. We always recommend that groups incorporate early to take advantage of any opportunities that come up. But also, if you can start some sort of programming or sales early, the best proof of concept is in the market. So putting your ideas into action, even on a small scale, might help you get that buy-in, might highlight that you're on the right track, or might highlight what you need to work on or rethink.
100%. And you know, you bring that bias for action into this, Kyle, which I think is really important. And then with a systematic approach, I think when people don't see a system, and it could be a bit of a, you know, it could put the brakes on things a little bit when you say, okay, we have to have a systematic approach of doing this, because people think, oh, I want to go out there and do everything. But if it's done systematically, it's just way better than running around with your hair on fire. But as you mentioned, the key is do it like you're living it, like it's already existing. It's like vision building. You envision the future as if it's already happened. That's the way you live it and do it. And then you'll understand that there's hiccups here. And, you know, in the co-op world is when you go out and you're actually selling people on the fact that co-op shares, and there's been great examples of companies or co-ops that have gone out there and just sell it as if it's already happening. And those are the ones that are most successful, to your point.
I guess maybe continuing on the thread of co-ops being successful, you've worked with, I don't know, dozens of groups, even just with us, and then hundreds more beyond that. Can you share some stories of success that might inspire our listeners?
Yeah, there's one. Great question. There's one actually that's in your backyard, Kyle, the Southeast Butcher Block. So Southeast Butcher Block, I had the privilege of working with this group through Cooperatives First, and it's in Alameda, Saskatchewan. So Southeastern Saskatchewan, and the challenge, coming back to what the problem statement is first, and the value they could provide as a co-op, is there was a butcher shop in town that actually did abattoir, so processing of animals, and cut and wrap. So a great shop in town, fantastic butcher that was there. And the business, he wanted to retire, and they needed a succession plan, because without this butcher and the abattoir, the facility, it obviously puts a risk for the ranchers in the area, because where they have their animals processed. So rather than just a straight succession where you maybe sell to a private sale, or worse, the worst case scenario was just get shut down and then there's no one to pick it up. They came together as a group, and there's several leaders of this, but one person I really want to give credit to is Trent Dorrance, who was the steering committee leader on this. It was my main point of contact through the process, and introduced me to wonderful people. There are a lot of people on there that made this happen. So he approached this with an abundance mindset and was really passionate about the co-op and started doing the things that we just talked about. He lived it as if it was going to happen. He went out there and sold it to people like it was going to happen. And then we worked the numbers on it from there. So it was quite the process, because another thing we did too is involved people early. So we had the steering committee, but we had town hall meetings. I remember the Legion Hall there was packed. We had a lot of good questions. It was a patient process. Trent and the steering committee led the meeting. I was there to provide context and more importantly, to listen to what people had to say. It wasn't my show. Not ever is it my show. It's there to listen and understand and get context. So at the process, what they understood was the math and that required to make this happen. Like this was a big build. The goal was to move forward from the company, the butcher shop is Davis Meats, and Murray, great butcher and great person. I learned a lot, so much from him. If he's listening, I want to acknowledge him as well, and his team. And what they wanted to do was develop a larger facility where their abattoir was and take the steps in order to engage the city, the province in some cases as well, the ranchers and surrounding communities that may not have been connected with in the past. There's neighboring indigenous communities as well that really had, that was really important and integral to this with having their animals processed. So all stakeholders were brought together. We evolved the plan. We developed an operating model with the financial model on this. And not only was it just Trent selling the idea, it became others that were selling the idea on these shares. And then they raised enough of the funds. We tweaked the financials back and forth. Lots of calls on Saturdays and Sundays and at nights with Trent, which I welcomed because he was passionate about it. Worked the numbers and he went out and sold it, lived it as if it happened. And to my knowledge, the ground is broken. The building is being erected now and it's going to be a beautiful class A facility where they have both processing and cut and wrap in there. And then they evolved to a nice value added products as well. So they're not just cutting and wrapping, but the plan in there was to develop brisket and smoked meats, and they sell pizzas in there that they make, and just a really great success story. And I've never had better burger patties than the ones that that Marie makes there. So it's that's an example. And I'm not being a cheerleader for them because they're friends of mine or because I've got to know them, or you know, I honestly, Kyle, this is just a great success story. I can't wait till they cut the ribbon there. And even though my time is done with that engagement, I plan to have it on my calendar when it's the time to come out. And that's how passionate I feel about them. I'll travel from BC to be there, part of their success when they do open the building.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You can follow along with the Southeast Butcher Block story on Facebook. They share updates pretty regularly. They share where they're at in their fundraising. I mean, the fundraising campaign they've been on is really impressive. Because if you want to test an idea, go out, pitch it to people, ask them for money. Can be a humbling experience, but in their case, they did exactly what you said, James. They knew that there was support out there for them. They knew the idea would resonate with people, and that created a real snowball effect, I think, both locally, but I mean, they also got, you know, good support from former Premier Brad Wall. They've been on some of the really popular talk shows here in Saskatchewan. No, people want local entrepreneurs to succeed, and that'll give them a platform and money to help them do that.
Yeah, no, and I can't say enough good things about those people. And they just rolled up their sleeves and made it happen. And the community really rallied around it, which was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, I mean, a key to tie some of our conversation together here, they knew what that end goal kind of looked like before even approaching us at Cooperatives First. And then before working on, you know, incorporating the co-op or creating that business plan, they had that kind of, they had ticked most of those boxes in how this business was going to work, who was going to be a part of it, and what that end goal to work towards kind of looked like.
Absolutely. And you know what I really like about this, Kyle, and maybe this is tied bow with, you know, from my perspective on this, is that going forward, if someone wanted to engage a consultant on building an abattoir or cut and wrap, I'm not the guy to go to. Go to Trent. You know what I mean? I know he doesn't wake up every morning to be a consultant, but guess what? He is, because he's lived it, and not just Trent. I mean, there's recognition, give credit where credit's due. There's many other people on that steering committee and the board and Marie as well. But the reality is you don't have to have all these letters behind your name, and you don't have to, you just have to be qualified to provide it. And where did Trent, first of all, he's very successful in what he does for his day job in addition to this. But by the way, this isn't his day job. You know, that's what's so impressive about this. There's a passion of his for his community. And secondly, he's very qualified. He is has qualifications apart from this, but doesn't bill himself as a consultant or anything else. But the reality is he has a mindset and a willingness to help others that would really put him in that position. So that's I'll leave it at that he's, and that competency that he's learned in this process could really help others. So that's where it takes all of us, almost, you know, all of us to come together and experiences that we've had to build a co-op, and not just for meat producing. He could help if someone was starting a knitting co-op, the things that he's learned that we've all learned from this experience could be shared. And that's what I think is so wonderful about the platform and the community you've built here, and the resources and tools and the people you put together, is that collectively we want to help others. So.
Yeah, fabulous. I couldn't agree more. Lots of groups, I mean, are working through the business planning part of their journey. They're trying to identify funding opportunities. Maybe they've got a grant application that they're working on. Lots of groups are out there spinning their tires. Mm-hmm. What's some advice you'd give to them to move things forward? What's some tips you'd pass along?
Well, the first thing I would say is commit to a process. So you can't wish your troubles away. You can't hope for dreams to come true. Commit to a process and get started. So as you mentioned, you get started, you live it as if it's going to happen. But don't just rely on someone from the outside to make it happen for you. So you want to get started. You want to involve other people. I think what I've seen in some cases too, that it's so reliant on a few people, and quite often a co-op, they're serving, as they should, serve a need, unmet need, in an underserved market. And it's a few people, and it can create burnout because it's a process that takes time. So you have to be patient with it. So even though there's one cavalier or there's one person at the start that really wants to move forward with this, don't be shy to involve a lot of people, because no one can do it themselves. I think we all could use that. And we got to be, you know, there's constraints. There's time, people, and money. Plus, people have to take care of their own families, their mental health, everything else. So if you put too much into this and it becomes a point where you're not enjoying it anymore, that's a red flag. Or this, it becomes consuming or frustrating, or you feel like, oh, why isn't anybody helping me? That's a sign to say it takes all of us to bring it forward. So my number one comment there is that be patient. Understand it's a process, and this is several comments. Be patient. It's a process. And then don't be shy to involve multiple people, because it can move along faster. Find as a consultant or a coach, you know, I don't push an agenda. I'm patient with it. And you wait for people to be, I realize they have lives of their own as well. And sometimes it takes longer. And then other people in the community might be thinking, why is this taking so long? Because you can't just wait for that one leader to make it happen and be the point of contact who connects with the consultant. It's fine to have a lot of people involved and just share the duties, because many hands make light work. And if you segregate the duties from the start and hold people accountable and have accountability agreements, both for the consultant and the coach, absolutely first, I put myself first, but also other people to say, can you get me this information? Can you get me this information? If it's one person trying to do it all, first of all, it's very difficult for them to do that for time. Secondly, we only get one perspective. And third, where's the succession in that? Because if that person owns it, where's it going to go if that person loses interest? Something happens to that person. They don't want to be a part of it. Life happens, you know, people move on. And the best way to leave it, as I mentioned earlier, is better than you found it. And the best way to do that is surround yourself with people that are going to make it better than it was before. So those, it's easier said than done, but I really think that's really important, is to bring a lot of people in at the start that are aligned in the same way, that understand the why, and that, back to where we started from, the who, what are we doing, and then how are we going to do this? I think it comes full circle in that sense, that no one can do this by themselves. And there's times as a consultant when I say, ooh, there's a blind spot I have. Let me bring in someone else who's got some opportunity that can make it a better outcome for everybody.
Yeah, I think that's some really great advice. I think anybody listening who is struggling, take that to heart, do a check-in with your team, reevaluate what you're doing. Do you still have the passion? If you do, you've got to live it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And finally, are there some resources or readings or information that you found particularly helpful, James, that you think other co-ops should check out or learn about?
Well, I mentioned earlier the Build the Better Business is a really good resource from picking up a book on that. There's also a great book called Start With Why, Simon Sinek. If many haven't heard of that, it's kind of a seminal book in business. But you don't, again, when I mention these books, I don't expect everybody to go out and spend a lot of money on Amazon, or these books are available at your library, or certainly you can get them at used bookstores as well, or you can just get the summaries online. So that's a really good one as well. And apart from books, where I think is great is the platform you've developed, Kyle. And I say this honestly and sincerely, that I wish, even when I was in business school, that I had something to look at that was that robust, and not to look at, to actually explore and sink my teeth into. And just because it's really centered on, it's human centered. and it's really understands where people are along the way, and it's just helpful, and it's done in a really nice way. And I also say that it's one chance I have to shout this out, that co-ops as a model is an alternative business model that should be taught in business schools. People, it's just so great. And a lot of work I do with succession planning as well. It's forming more and more of the option for succession going forward. So all that to be said, I think just reaching out to the platform you developed, Cooperatives First, not just the platform, but you and your team there are so approachable as well, that to send an email, pick up the phone and make an appointment, I think that's the best resource. Books are books. I would start here, and then you can augment your learning with after you've talked to Kyle and the team at Cooperatives First.
Awesome. I appreciate the shout out. And then where can folks connect with you, James? How can folks learn more about your work and what you do?
Oh, absolutely. No, thanks, Kyle. So my website is catalyst-strategies.com. And also invite people to listen. There's a new product we're developing with my colleague and co-creator of Succession Ready at successionready.ca. And we've launched a couple seasons of our podcast there, and we're really excited about that. But please, you can reach out to me, or you can email me directly at james@catalyst-strategies.com. It's a bit of a long email address, but you find me there, or just Google me at Catalyst Strategies, and love to pick up the conversation and have a chat.
Thank you for joining us. For more on us and what we do, visit cooperativesfirst.com. If you need resources for starting your own co-op, check out coopcreator.com. It's a great resource site that has everything you need to get a co-op up and running. To give us your thoughts on anything we discussed in this episode, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or on Twitter as coops_first.